True Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Thank you for tuning in tonight. It's quite a weekend, wasn't it? Not only the Occupy demonstrations that have now, of course, gone global, but there's something else that occurred this weekend, and I wasn't aware of it until this evening. This weekend marked a new milestone for the war in Afghanistan. The total number of U.S. troops killed in the war has doubled since Obama took office. That's according to iCasualties.org and U.S. troops in Afghanistan. There's a web counter there. That means that two-thirds of the total U.S. troop deaths have occurred in the last 2 years and 8 months, which accounts for roughly a third of the duration of the war to date. 1,728 U.S. troops have died in Afghanistan since October 7th, 2001, with 1,153 of those deaths having occurred since President Obama's inauguration. 575 U.S. troops died in Afghanistan during Bush's term in office. Just thought you might want to know that. This past week, and I know you're aware of this. Oh, by the way, let me just mention that this hour is being sponsored by Val Schmidt. Thank you, Val. His message for my son, Misha, who spent 2 days and a night occupying Wall Street. Long live the revolution. And thank you, Mike. Val. Appreciate it, Valerie. Anyway, thousands of protest demonstrations occurred all over the globe. What did I read today? There were demonstrations in 90 different countries, in addition to numerous American cities over the weekend. Here in Atlanta, there was a deadline for, I believe, 4:30 this afternoon to clear Woodruff Park right in the heart of downtown Atlanta, a green space. The protesters had vowed not to move. And the mayor of Atlanta, Kasim Reed, found himself in a terrible position of being the mayor of a city that essentially gave birth to certain elements of the civil rights movement. And Mayor Kasim Reed found himself then in a position of having to make a decision about arresting people who were peacefully demonstrating, something that Mr. Kasim Reed is very familiar with. Well, at the last possible moment, and I mean literally the last possible moment, word came from City Hall here in Atlanta that the mayor had extended permission for the Occupy Atlanta group to stay where they are till November 7th. That's when the next Atlanta City Council meeting will be held. So the hundreds of people in we used to call it Central City Park, but now it's called Woodruff Park. The several hundred demonstrators who have been camped there will remain. Dave Lefcourt, writing at Op-Ed News, points out that people worldwide are identifying with this movement. And the reason, as Lefcourt mentions, is because they too are dealing with the adverse effects of the globalized financial system that serves, and you know who it serves only the big moneyed interests in league with the political thugs that they underwrite. And the basic unfairness and injustice so readily identified with by everybody. It's not just the people in the protest. You don't have to be at the protest. Not yet. Eventually, you probably will have to. But you can still identify with what they're talking about and what they're demonstrating for. The basic unfairness and injustice that capitalism has dumped now on the entire planet. Now, this is, you know, this is not new stuff. This is legitimate, long-standing grievances. And yeah, they were first expressed here most recently by the Occupy Wall Street protesters, but it's become the catalyst for thousands to rally around and take to the streets, not just in America, but around the globe. And what is happening is a breaking free of this feeling of being powerless. The thing that we lamented on this program just so long and so often, not knowing what to do, waiting for the young generation to lead a revolution because it is up to them to do so. The future is theirs. It's not mine. It's not yours, depending on your age, of course, but it's theirs. So that leadership probably showed itself, not in the form of charismatic leaders, to the contrary, in the form of a few dozen people at the very beginning who said, look, this is nonsense. We're going to occupy, since we've had two or three administrations in this country now that just apparently loves the word occupy. Okay, we're going to occupy. And there it began. And the people who are putting themselves out there in this first wave of protesters in this country are saying essentially, we are here, we will be heard, and we're not going to take it anymore. You, and they point toward the capitalists and the corporatists who now run the government, you are responsible for creating this terrible economic situation and creating the struggles that we face now. You got bailed out with our money, and now harsh austerity measures are placed on our backs while you get off scot-free and are not being held accountable. And as Lefcourt points out, the phrase sort of encapsulates the myriad number of different signs held aloft along the along with the chants expressed. In other words, we are the 99%. We got sold out. Banks got bailed out all day, all week. Occupy Wall Street. Corporations are not money. Get money out of politics, and so forth. So to watch this spread to the point where people who find themselves in the same situation, capitalism is not localized. It has been globalized. The predatory style of capitalism that is merciless, that will take a country and smash it up against a brick wall. And if the entire social structure of that country collapses, the capitalists don't give a goddamn one way or the other. Give us the money. Give us the money. Give it to us. And when a country refuses to do that, the capitalists can bring all sorts of hammers down without firing a shot, without sending one warplane or one drone or one warship to that country. The capitalists know how to destroy it, and they can, and they do. Perhaps not anymore. You think? Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Every
self-evident. Well, this is evident, yeah. In the American way, you must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and what's just. Because I want, because I will, because I
can. Oh, well, don't you see how open up in this hole?
Your nightly ammunition against rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Oh, and by the way, as the Occupy Wall Street movement is spreading across the nation, politicians in D.C. Gave the finger to protesters, including those camping in Washington's McPherson Square, what we redubbed Freedom Plaza. You know, much was made by the right-wing gibberheads when I gave my little 8-minute speech up there and used the F word twice and appropriately in the context of what I was trying to say. And, you know, I always laugh at that. I think it's so funny that the F word is just so scary to people. And if not scary, the right wingers use that as a way of saying, see, he cusses, you know, like, I don't know, some little hall monitor in junior high school or something. It never fails to kind of make me chuckle. But the politicians in Washington are the ones that said, go F yourself to the protesters all around the country. And the way they did it, Leo Girard, United Steelworkers president, had a piece in InThesetimes.com. And as he points out, while occupiers sought political focus on the unemployment, the impoverishment, and the foreclosures suffered by this nation's non-rich 99%, politicians in Washington, we talked about this, considered three major pieces of legislation and passed only the one that will help the wealthiest 1% and hurt the remaining 99% of us. What did they do? Well, Senate Republicans, first they murdered by filibuster the American Jobs Act, which would surtax the 1% to provide jobs for the 99%. Both houses of Congress adopted the so-called free trade agreements with Panama, Colombia, and Korea, which, just like NAFTA, destroy more jobs held by the 99% in this country. It's incredible. Now, the Senate did pass the currency manipulation bill, whatever the hell that is. Oh, that's right. That's against the Chinese for not devaluing their currency. Who does that? I know, I've heard the argument. Well, as long as they keep their currency artificially high, it's like a tax on everybody in this country. It's just like import surtaxes, blah, 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 blah. But it's incredible. You know, we live in a country where joblessness is around 17 or 18%. Don't pay any attention to that stupid-ass 9.1%. That means nothing. Nothing. If it really were 9%, we wouldn't have 1 in 5 children living in poverty, which we do. Foreclosures rose again last month. There's a whole movement growing to protest the appeasement of the rich at the cost of the middle class. So either the Occupy Wall Street protesters aren't loud enough yet, or the politicians in Washington refuse to listen. And it's not just street demonstrators that the politicians can't seem to hear. Poll after poll has shown Americans' first priority, their major concern, is jobs. And what is happening is that the Occupy movement is starting to gather public support, a lot of public support. Yet when Obama proposed this puny little American Jobs Act, a measure that would have created just under 2 million jobs when we have 20 million people unemployed, but it's a start, and ease taxes on the middle class and small businesses, Republicans in the Senate said hell no. Now, if we had majority rule in this country where it concerns stuff like this, the Jobs Act would have passed the Senate with 51 Democrats in favor. But in the Senate, the Republicans stop all action by requiring 60 votes to end their threatened filibusters. They never actually do one. So where are the jobs? Huh? Where are the jobs that the Republicans during the midterm election told us they were going to produce? Remember that? When was that? How long ago was that? Where are the jobs, you rancid bastards? When we come back, I'm going to play a piece of sound for you by a relatively new and relatively popular television commentator who had his second, or was this the first? No, this was his second nerve out on his own program. And as a result, he had to take a week vacation. But I want you to hear what he had to say. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Angry, let Mike do it for you.
25 before the hour. And again, this hour is being sponsored by Val Schmidt. And his message from my son Misha, who spent 2 days and a night occupying Wall Street, long live the revolution. And thank you, Mike. From Val. Thank you, Val. All right, I want you to hear this this rant, and I just want to say to this guy, you know, welcome to this side of people who commentate either on national TV like you do, or this little 25-cent radio program like I do. Now, music has been added to his rant for dramatic effect, but I want you to listen to this. It takes about, what is it, about 3 minutes? Okay, here it is.
I'm not here to talk about plans to deal with this till 2017. I'm saying we've got a real problem, and I'm tired of Republicans and Democrats who either want, Republicans who want to burn the place to the ground, and Democrats, with all due respect, who want to offer a plan that gets it through the their end of their second term of their presidency, and then screws me and my kids when it's over. And until we do that, we have to deal with the extraction that is at foot. It is the reason the financial markets are behaving the way they're behaving. That is a mathematical fact. This is not some opinion. This is a mathematical fact. Tens of trillions of dollars are being extracted from the United States of America. Democrats aren't doing it. Republicans are not doing it. An entire integrated system, financial system, trading system, taxing system that was created by both parties over a period of 2 decades is at work on our entire country right now. And we're sitting here arguing about whether we should do the $4 trillion plan that kicks the can down the road for the president for 2017 or burn the place to the ground, both of which are reckless, irresponsible, and stupid. I've been coming on TV for 3 years doing this, and the fact of the matter is that there's a refusal on both the Democratic and the Republican side of the aisle to acknowledge the mathematical problem, which is that the United States of America is being extracted. It's being extracted through banking, it's being extracted through trade, and it's being extracted through taxation. Go to the people of the United States of America and say, people of the United States of America, your Congress is bought. Your Congress is incapable of making legislation on health care, banking, trade, or taxes, because if they do it, they will lose their political funding and they won't do it. But I'm the President of the United States, and I will have a country that is run by a bought Congress. So I'm not going to work with a bought Congress and try to be Mr. Big Guy. I work with the bought Congress. I'm going to abandon the bought Congress like Teddy Roosevelt did, and I'm going to go to the people of the United States and I'm going to say, you've got a bought Congress. And until we get rid of the bought Congress, which is Jimmy Williams' constant point, which is get the money out of politics, and until a president says that's the problem and says he's going to fix it, there is no policy that I can possibly see, no matter how brilliant your idea may be, or your idea, or my idea, or her idea, or your idea at home, is that idea will not happen as long as there's the capacity to basically fire a politician who disagrees with me by taking funding away from me. Is that a fair assessment?
Money, politics, is the root of all political evil. It is corruption at its worst. And until we step up and kick that out of the park, it's going to be the same system.
And because when you realize that the banking system is fully corrupt and defrauding us, and I come out and say that, which is what I want my president to do, that at that exact moment I say, you know what, we've got a screwed up situation here, people. You all know it, and now what? I'm going to admit it. And as a result, not only have I admitted it, but we're going to begin the process of solving it like grown-ups. They did it in World War II. They did it after the Civil War. They did it in Latin America with the Brady Bonds.
Well, now. And that, of course, is Dylan Radigan from MSNBC. This was several weeks ago. As a matter of fact, it was prior to the Occupy Wall Street action. But, I have to say, I don't care how this sounds, I have to say it. It makes me feel good to hear someone who has a position in media finally taking a stand and stopping with the weasel words. I mean, a stand on the side of justice. I'm not talking about these maniacal sons of bitches that work for Fox or Limbaugh or the rest of these pigs. I'm talking about somebody who understands the truth and is willing to say the truth, even though his or her employer may not appreciate that very much. Now, shortly after that Dylan Radigan, I think he had a week off, you know, vacation time. But imagine if all the commentators that have these huge audiences, I don't know how big Dylan Radigan's audience is on MSNBC in the middle of the afternoon, but it's got to be several hundred thousand, maybe a million. I don't know. But imagine if responsible journalists did that. And not just in television, not just on radio, but also in the print medium, where there would be no equivocation, no yada, 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 but on the other hand, yada, 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 there would be no attempt to find some kind of parity between the Occupy movement and these moronic teabag types. Wouldn't it be great just to hear the truth come out? Just to hear people who do have these vast audiences state the truth? And with the passion that Radigan put into that, absolutely. And, you know, in my own little personal world, which is about, doesn't extend too far beyond my own consciousness, you know, I just wanted to reach out to Dylan Radigan and say, welcome to this side of the fence, pal. Simply because he's in media. He has a job where he can provide the truth if he chooses to. and bless his heart for doing it. A lot of people say, well, hey, you know, a newscaster or somebody with a show like that, you're supposed to keep it neutral. No, you're not. You're not supposed to keep it anything. Besides, Dylan Ratigan is not a newscaster. He is a program host on MSNBC, and there's a big difference. The New York Times had something to say about the free trade agreements passed by Congress as they gave the finger to everybody in this country. I mean, it's just astonishing. Here we are, once again, hundreds of thousands of people in this country taking to the streets, demanding jobs, and the United States Congress, Democrats and Republicans alike, ratify more of these free trade agreements, which will drive more jobs out of the United States. It's astonishing. It's almost like they come up to the different protests and just start screaming, F you, F you, F you, you dirty, rotten, useless, worthless hippies, you disgusting young people. We are taking your future because that's what we are being instructed to do by capitalist America, and we are going to do what our masters tell us to do. But the New York Times said this, in its kind of weaselly worded way, quote, economists generally predict that free trade agreements, which eliminate tariffs and other policies aimed at protecting domestic manufacturers, free trade agreements benefit all participating nations by creating a larger common market, increasing sales and reducing prices. But such deals also create clear losers, as workers lose well-paid jobs to foreign competition. I told you it'd be sort of weaselly worded, right? We can't afford to lose any more manufacturing jobs, a few that we have left. But it's predicted that these agreements will particularly damage the U.S. textile industry that is already just punch drunk, wobbling around inside the ring, barely able to stay on its feet. The electronics industry, what's left of it, and the auto supply industries. They're going to be gone. And remember how many times politicians told us that NAFTA would create hundreds of thousands of U.S. jobs, and it did just the opposite? It drove millions of jobs out of the country. Why would something different occur this time? So back to the basic question, where's the jobs, Mr. Boehner? Where's the jobs, Mr. McConnell? Where's the jobs, Mr. Cantor, you rancid sons of bitches? Where are they? The Times editorial board said this about Republicans. The Republicans offer no actual economic plans, only tired slogans about cutting regulations and spending and ending health care reform. The party seems content to run out the clock on Mr. Obama's term while doing nothing. On Tuesday, Mr. Obama's campaign manager, Jim Messina, accused Republicans of trying to suffocate the economy in hopes that the pain would work to their political advantage. Suffocate the economy. Well, as the Occupy Wall Street movement is showing now, we can't wait. We've had enough. And we are now responding.
Each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Valerie Schmidt. His message for my son Misha, who spent 2 days and a night occupying Wall Street. Long live the revolution. And thank you, Mike. Val, thanks a lot for the sponsorship. We appreciate it. And a V for victory sign to your son. From Prairie 2, zombies are on the move. Check your brains. The stock market fell more than 2% today, killing last week's rally. This happened despite generally good corporate earnings reports, but bank stocks dropped sharply, and this dragged the markets down. The clever saying in the news today is that stock pickers, quote, may be forced to join the protesters on Wall Street, end quote. The implication is that it's becoming impossible to identify a predictable stock going up or going down. The stock market is currently at a level that negates the last 10 years of investing, and the market shows no sign of doing anything but preparing for the big plunge. Of course, if you are a Wall Street bank executive or a hedge fund manager, you made billions without producing a single thing of value. Isn't capitalism grand? When I say billions, I don't mean as a group that many made billions as individuals and paid a maximum 15% tax. Herman Cain, Mitt Romney, and the rest of the Republicans would take the tax on that type of income down not to just 9%, but down to zero. The number of home mortgages classified as delinquent rose last month for the first time in nearly 2 years. Redefaults on modified mortgages are starting to happen in significant numbers, according to the banks, but they give no numbers and are probably trying to justify their failure to refinance mortgages at the record low interest rates now available. Banks say that the loans currently going bad are prime mortgages and not the so-called subprime loans. The layoff of 500,000 government workers by Republican governors might have something to do with the surge in defaults, but shrinking government was supposed to be a good thing, right? U.S. Treasury bonds and the German Bund are again gaining favor as a safe haven, with yields of 10-year notes again falling to barely 2% as investors bid the selling price up. It is supposedly the uncertainty about the bailout of euro bondholders that is making the U.S. zombie banks a dodgy investment, as conventional wisdom states that U.S. banks have a heavy exposure to the European banks. A more accurate way of looking at it is that Wall Street caused the problem in Europe by looting and pillaging their way across the continent. In fact, they are still doing so. And they, the American banks, are causing the crisis. Credit insurance markets are getting increasingly jumpy, with the cost of insuring bank debt through credit default swaps rising sharply. The credit default swaps on Citigroup debt is being particularly hard hit, rising 16 basic points to 261, whatever that means. And you see similar rates for the other big zombie banks. It was a credit freeze up that made obvious the banking collapse of 2008. But it had been coming for years. Nothing about these banks has been fixed. They instead have been allowed to siphon funds from the stock market and to gouge consumers. This is coming to an end, however, and it will be ugly. It could happen any time, but more than likely it will be sometime next year. It depends on what happens in the Eurozone, as this will determine how quickly it all comes to a head. Hide your brains where the zombies can't find them. PrairieNumeral2.com. Let me add to what he wrote. Buy canned goods. Bruce, you have to stop referring to the CDS, the credit default swaps. Most of us don't know what that is. And when you say the CDS on Citigroup debt is being particularly hard hit, rising 16 basic points to 261, and you see similar rates for the other big zombie banks, seriously, I don't have a clue what you're saying. And I don't think a lot of my listeners do either. You've got to keep it simple. You really do. Bless your heart for constantly contributing to the program. But rising 16 basic points to 261. Duh. I have no idea. And now I'm going to get a bunch of emails that say, boy, are you a dumbass? We know what he's talking about. Okay, maybe so. The October 2011.org movement, the one I participated in a couple of weeks ago, that is occupying Freedom Plaza. This is from warsacrime.org. They led an impromptu march of about 300 people up Pennsylvania Avenue at the U.S. Supreme Court the other day, where Dr. Cornel West climbed up on the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court and denounced court decisions that have produced money-based elections that empower corporations. Now, you know who he is. He is a professor at Princeton. He teaches in the Center for African American Studies in the Department of Religion. He's an American philosopher, author, critic, actor, civil rights activist, and also a prominent member of the Democratic Socialists of America, Cornel West. Anyway, he spoke to more than 500 people on Freedom Plaza, where he said, quote, if Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. were alive today, he would be on Freedom Plaza, end quote. And then West described how the struggle against poverty, war, and injustice continues. He went to, along with several other people, Tarek Koff of Veterans for Peace, Ellen Davidson of the Independent newspaper, filmmaker Dennis Traynor Jr., and Maria Allwine, an independent political activist. They were all busted on the steps of the Supreme Court, exercising their First Amendment rights. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Open 877-996-2556. If you have something that you just know, the listeners can't wait to hear. 877-996-2556. This hour is sponsored by Greg Arnold. Thank you, Greg. His message for my late father, Richard, on his birthday. His New York Fire Department pension, obtained after becoming a paraplegic in a 1978 firefight, allowed my mother to stay at home and care for him and their 14 children. I miss you, Pops. Thanks, Greg. I think the thing that impressed me the most this past weekend, of course, is probably the same thing that impressed you, was the joining into this movement, this Occupy movement, by so many people around the globe who are facing the same kinds of predations, predatory capitalism, as we in this country. And I guess the thing that continues to wow me, though, is how little attention is being paid, at least visible attention is being paid to this movement by the corporate thugs against whom it is targeted. And I guess that's because they genuinely feel that they are immune from the protests, from they are immune from any kind of action taken against them, because not just in the United States, but in so many countries, they own the governments. This has been the objective and the goal and the accomplishment of the past 30 years, to destroy the one power that existed as a counterweight against predatory capitalism, and that was the union movement. And one of the biggest enablers to this whole problem, and this is what drives me crazy every time Bill Clinton opens his damn mouth, especially when he opens his mouth to give advice to the Occupy movement. It was Bill Clinton, not him alone, but it was Bill Clinton who signed off on NAFTA, signed off on these misnamed free trade agreements, and allowed this country to be absolutely gutted of its industrial strength. It's gone. And the thing about capitalism never says, oops, we made a mistake, and comes back home. The only time capitalism says we made a mistake, they never say that. What they say is, certain forces were at play that they had no anticipation were going to be at play, and therefore the whole house of cards is collapsing, and therefore, citizens, you're going to have to pay for all this because we're too big to fail. You can go straight to hell. You can wind up on the street. You can wind up in a food pantry. You can wind up in a goddamn cardboard box sleeping under a bridge. We don't care, but we will be bailed out. And we don't go to you, the people. We go to the punks and pigs that we got elected and put into the House and the Senate, Democrats and Republicans. They will take your money and give it to us. Jesus, God. I mean, when you see that on paper or you just lay it out in a simple scenario, it's like, why have the people not risen up, dragged these corporatists, these capitalists, into the streets? During the Great Leap Forward in the 60s, and Mao's Little Red Book, what they did with the capitalist roaders, they dragged them out on the street and put dunce caps, these huge pointed dunce caps covered in Chinese characters that must have said things like, I am an enemy of the people. I am a predator. I did this. I did that. And remember how everybody in this country went, oh my gosh, that is so terrible. There was a lot about the Great Leap Forward that was horrifying. Absolutely. Disgusting, contemptible. And were Mao alive today and his cadre of revolutionaries, they would probably look at this crew that's running China now and drag them into the streets and do worse than put dunce caps on them. But, you know, we have been conned so long into believing that there was this mighty struggle between communism, godless communism is what they always called it, and godly capitalism, this massive conflict. And we bought into that. I remember being taught that in primary grades and secondary school, being taught that my entire, and until I got beyond that kind of teaching. But that's what three generations of Americans were taught. And it was based on that we have killed millions around the globe, and we've had tens of thousands of our own people killed based on that lie. That there was this global conflict between communism and capitalism. There was no global conflict between those two ideologies, those two economic systems. It was a global conflict between power-mad sons of bitches on both sides of that equation. Because take a look, all of communism is now a kind of corporate fascism or capitalism. There was never any fight about an economic system. It was always about who is going to get the biggest chunks of the global pie. Who's going to get the most? Who's going to beat down the opposition? Well, I don't know. It's hard to tell right now who the winner was, is, right? Look at the Chi-Coms. And then take a look at the predators on Wall Street. Somebody tell me the difference. I don't think there is one. What is this? Do I have some jerk here? I'm not in the mood for a jerk. All right. Mark is in Houston. All right, what do you want to say? Income inequality is great. How so, Mark?
Well, I don't know that it's necessarily great, but I think that there's an issue in that, you know, who's to say what is the correct amount of income any one person should have?
That's not the point. Nobody's ever said that. What people are saying is that when you have people being dispossessed out of their homes, when you have people who can't find a job, and then you have a group of 0.1% in this country are making billions, do you have a problem with that? And they're not producing anything. They're not making jobs for the rest of us, these capitalists. They're sitting on $2 or 3 trillion in assets that they're just saying, no, we're not going to do anything. Screw you. Do you call that? What do you call that?
No, when people, if anybody makes money, it's because somebody else is. They provided something else.
No, that's absolutely not true. Absolutely not true. I can, I make money doing this radio show, but I there's nobody else. There's nobody that gets exploited. I mean, if I go open a furniture store and build furniture, me and my wife and maybe my brother, and sell furniture, who's being exploited?
Nobody's being exploited. I don't think anybody's being exploited.
Who's being exploited when the robber capitalists on Wall Street continue to manipulate the money markets to the point where people can't afford to stay in their own homes, where people don't have any jobs because the capitalists have said, let's move the jobs out of America. Why should we pay $20 an hour to make...
Well, the mortgage rates are as low as...
No, wait a second. Why? They are now. Why aren't the banks refinancing for people then?
Banks are refinancing.
They're not. No, they absolutely are not. Nobody can get a loan now. Oh, unless you have a credit score of 850. No, I'll tell you what, Mark. I really don't want to talk to you anymore because it's people like you that just, I don't know, you give me the willies. I don't like you. Okay. I don't like what you have to say. I don't like the point of view, the position you're coming from. So, Mark, please go away. Drive safely, but please go away. We'll be right back.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
And a poor bond out house. 21 past the hour. Mike is in Detroit. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Mike, I called you a few weeks ago regarding what's been going on with how people have this gut feeling that this America they've grown up in and learned to love is somehow being morphed or changed into something else. And since I called you, all of these Occupy Wall Street movements and things happened, and I felt compelled to call you again to tell you that there is a tsunami in the night coming at us called the North American Union. And it's being implemented just the same way they did the European Union and the African Union, the Asian Union. These four the North American Union will encompass Canada, Mexico, United States into a super state with a commingled economy and will eventually extend down into South America, and they'll just simply call it the American Union then. And this is about a new world order.
All right, now wait a second. What's wrong? What's wrong with a North American unified market? Tell me what.
Okay. What's wrong with it is that the countries involved have to basically give up their sovereignty. They have to basically have their ideology usurped in favor of a faceless, plutocracy-driven new world order.
That's already happened.
Well, it's definitely taking on.
This is a part where, when I hear people talking about this North American alliance or whatever it is, I get completely lost in trying to understand. Wait a second. I get completely lost in trying to understand where's the threat. I mean, the global economy is already in the process of being destroyed. What the hell difference would it make if Canada and the U.S. and Mexico? I mean, we already have NAFTA. I mean, what?
Well, it's because of NAFTA and Super NAFTA
What is Super NAFTA?
Super NAFTA, I'm referring to the Super NAFTA highway that's being built and being run right through Rick Perry's backyard out of Mexico City through central United States up into Canada.
What highway? I haven't seen any construction going on.
There's all kinds of websites talking about the Super NAFTA highway.
I can talk about little green creatures coming here from Venus, but nobody sees this highway being built. Where is it?
Well, it's coming through Laredo, Texas.
If I go to Laredo, Texas, there is a massive superhighway being built.
They're laying the groundwork and fixing the legislation to do this.
Wait a second. Not beyond that. I mean, you're the one that brought it up. Not me. I didn't bring it up. But who is getting the legislation in order for this? The state of Texas? The state of Oklahoma?
It's through political proposals and the Security Prosperity Partnership.
That's kind of gibberish to me. Who is doing it? Give me names. Is it Barack Obama?
He doesn't have
that kind of power.
It transcends national politics.
That's just more fancy words, Mike. Damn it. Give me something concrete. Don't talk website words to me. Just tell me, where is it being built? Are the construction workers all hard at work at this? Are they laying concrete? Are they acquiring a rights of way? Who's doing it?
They're acquiring the land and they're laying the groundwork, just like it's a plutocracy driven by a
who is buying the land? Is it a consortium of capitalists?
Made up of billionaires of the world. You're a plutocracy, government of the wealthy, by the wealthy, for the wealthy.
So,
it's the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergs, the Illuminati, the Trilateral Commission, these so-called secret societies that are bringing, they've already hooked up the European Union.
Okay, well, wait, Mike, let me just suggest to you that I think you're wasting a lot of mental energy here. The European Union, that was more of a monetary alignment. And it was brought about because, among other reasons, at least the idea that was batted out there was because, in unifying Europe, maybe we could stop these wars that cost the lives of tens of millions of people. But as far as, spending all your breath and mental energy on an invisible highway that the plutocracy is building, the plutocracy, what the hell do they want the highway for? They don't need the highway. They don't need any of it. They already own everything anyway. That's all I'm suggesting, Mike. I appreciate you checking in. Take care.
monkeys on the air, flying monkeys everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Greg Arnold. Wait a second, is that, is this Greg?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Greg.
I wanted to call in. Yeah, I'm the one who's sponsoring the second hour tonight, because for two things. One is, when you were talking about my family, you said 14 kids on the first thing. It was four, not 14. Oh, that's a lot of kids.
There's a typo here. Okay. All right.
Fault, I apologize.
No, it's not your fault. No, not at all.
Oh, okay. but it was something easy to do. You know, today's his birthday. He's been dead 14 years, and he died from complications of his injury, and he wound up getting diabetes, and he was a double amputee 20 years later, and... Mm-hmm. And, you know, I felt in this time of Occupy Wall Street, and everybody's trying to figure out why these occupations really happening. And I kind of saw my family situation as part of a big reason why. Well, we were just a simple, hardworking, middle class family out on Long Island. My father was the fireman. My mother was working at home. And at the time I was about a year old, my twin sister and I were surprises. We weren't planned. So my father had two more mouths to feed, and then he gets hurt. And if not for the pension, if not for the social safety net, we would have been just another statistic, another casualty of losing a house, losing a mortgage, getting thrown out on the street. And just because medical bills would have done us in. And, you know, when you look at what's going on with Occupy Wall Street, I see a lot of that, where people just want to have dignity and make a living. And the current system is not allowing us to do that. So
Right. That's
why I felt the need to sponsor tonight. So I appreciate all you do, and just keep fighting for us, and we'll keep supporting you, okay?
Well, that's great, Greg. I appreciate you calling and checking in. And I'm sorry I said 14 kids.
No worries.
Okay.
No worries. Have a great night, Mike. Thanks so much.
All right, man. Thank you very much, Greg. I appreciate it. So the hour is sponsored by Greg, he who just called, for his late father, Richard, on his birthday. And as Greg wrote, his New York Fire Department pension, obtained after becoming a paraplegic, allowed my mother to stay at home and care for him and their four children. And Greg closes with, "Miss you, Pops." Very kind sponsorship, but also very kind message. Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it. Mitch is in Sycamore, Illinois. Hey, Mitch.
Hello. I wanted to call in about the Panama Treaty.
Yeah.
I'm very upset about that. First of all, Panama is a shipping node where if the factories move to Panama and line the Panama Canal and just have a few drop-off points to load ships, they can very inexpensively move goods to Europe, North America, South America, and even some parts of Asia and Africa. Most of the Mexican factories that have devastated us so much are just in six cities: Reynosa, Nogales, Ciudad Juarez, and a few others. And this Panama will also bring in factories from China and hurt China.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, I am sorry. We, once again, the phones just disconnect. I apologize for that. If you can call back in, please do. Damn it. Welcome to third-rate radio, right? All right, let's try Greg in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hello, Greg.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm fine.
I just wanted to speak just really, really briefly on what the two callers behind Mike spoke on. And I think Mike's deal is kind of like how mine was at one point, and that was you read and you keep digging and you keep going down that rabbit hole and you start seeing stuff that's really, really ugly.
You're talking about the guys talk about the superhighway.
Superhighway and all of that, and New World Order and all of that. Well, see, here's the part that I had to come to. I had to come to the fact that there was a time when all our colonies were separate. They had their own money, their own military, their own everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got together and said, you know, we should be a united nation, not nation, but a united country, and call it the United States of America. That's what we did, and it ended up being a pretty good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think uniting Europe is not a bad thing. I think uniting the whole globe is not a bad thing. The bad thing is the intent of those who want to rule it all.
Right.
And there's only one reason why people want to rule it all, because there's a benefit to ruling. In other words, there's a financial, and with that finance comes power. And I think that the biggest thing, it's like they're talking about in the Wall Street movement, the Occupy Wall Street movement, that need to take money out of politics. Well, to take money out of politics is like taking the syringe out of a heroin addict's arm, but keeping the syringe in his hand.
That's right.
So in essence, what has to disappear is the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
And if it has to turn into like the Zeitgeist movement is talking about, where there's a resource-based economy and the whole world's resources are the benefit of the whole world, then you don't have one country that controls 12. And you don't have one country like America who's decided they're going to be the military might of the world, mm-hmm. and the Vatican being the religious propaganda of the world, and Great Britain being the monetary capital of the world. You eliminate all of that when you eliminate the benefit. So and people will we already only have 5% of the money, if you will, generated in this world is paper and coin. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean all the rest of it is? It's nothing.
Right.
We're already getting everything for free as it is.
Well,
it's just an idea.
I tend to agree with that idea, Greg. I used to talk on the air, as a matter of fact, about the ridiculousness of having national boundaries. We live on a little speck of sand floating in the Milky Way galaxy.
And right,
it's,
right.
It's all these national boundaries, and this is mine, and get your hands off of my stack, and, you know, I'm going to come over and bomb you, and, you know, my religion is better than yours, and my
right.
my people are prettier than yours, and you know, in most utopian science fiction, not the dystopian type like Orwell's or Huxley's, but the utopian type of science fiction, when I was a kid growing up, it was always a one world government. Now, I'm not saying that those rulers were, in some instances, they were benevolent dictators, and in other instances,
right.
they were, it might be a parliament or a governing body. But to me,
right.
as a kid reading science fiction, I thought, you know, this makes sense. I mean, why have national boundaries and different currencies and all this nationalistic hatred and fervor? Why can't? And then, years later, when I heard, what's his name say, why can't we all get along after the L.A. riots? You know, I thought,
right, Rodney King. Yeah.
Yeah, Rodney King. I thought, damn, I remember reading that when I was in seventh grade.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
It's
so
simplistic. Simplicity is always best. The more that is complicated, politics is designed to complicate. The banking system is designed to complicate. It's all designed to complicate, so we just say, you know what, forget about it.
Right.
But now, the Occupy movement doesn't need a clear message.
That's right.
They don't need a clear message. All they need is to stay positive, stay above the low frequency, because those that control us are working in low frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're working in low frequency, that means they are low frequency. And you know, just like I know, if you got low frequency band, just like they do on our station here in Minneapolis, after a certain time of night, they lower the frequency, and I can barely pick you up when I'm on my way home.
I know.
So it's the same thing. If we keep raising our frequency, and if the Occupy movement continues to keep their frequencies high and positive, not negative, we will usurp these idiots, because they don't know any other way. Fear and hate and greed is all they know.
Mm-hmm.
They're psychopaths, just like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't hate them. I feel sorry for them, because that's the life that they live.
That's right. That's right.
I like my life. I love my life. And I'll tell you something. When you decide to get away from right, left, Democrat, Republican,
mm-hmm.
I knew it was going to open the door for a lot more of the conspiracy theory, sleeping in a bunker type people.
Right.
But, you know, just tread lightly on them. They mean well. They're just fearful. And just let them know. Let the fear go.
No, I hear you. They're scared to death. You know, when the old order breaks down, no matter what the old order is, until the new order is established, it leaves people totally confused, totally freaked out, running around the streets
yeah.
with their hair on fire.
stay positive. Stay positive. Keep it simple.
There you go.
Keep it simple.
Thanks, Greg. I like you. I like your message, man. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, brother.
All right. Take care. Yeah, that is so true. I did used to think about that, the simplicity of it. But like Greg says, you know, just because it's simple doesn't mean it's wrong. Matter of fact, Occam's razor, is that what it is? The simplest explanation, all things being equal, the simplest explanation is usually the correct one or something like that. But it's just ridiculous how human species, how we've degenerated into what we're in. Now, I'm completely in favor of that utopian model, completely. We'll be right back.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's about 9 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Greg Arnold in memory of his late father, Richard. This is Richard's birthday. And as Greg writes, his New York Fire Department pension obtained after becoming a paraplegic in a 1978 firefight allowed my mother to stay at home and care for him and their four children. Miss you, Pops. Greg, thanks very much. Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hello, Mark.
Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
I just want to bring up the fact about our democracy being under attack by voter suppression by the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge issue, Mike.
Yeah, it is. I was going to try to get to what Ari Berman has in the current issue of The Nation, the October 24th issue of The Nation on the noted page entitled The Real Voter Fraud. I'll probably get to it tomorrow. But, yeah, that's what we were talking about many times, about how even our system of picking winners and losers has been co-opted and taken over by capitalism. And now the winners are usually determined by whoever owns the voting machine, just like Stalin predicted.
You know, Mike, that's a big issue. Our right to vote is precious. And you and I could go to a ballot box. I mean, well, I have paper ballots here, so I have a fairly good system. But if you have a voting machine, there's no real way you can really tell if your vote counts.
That's right.
And that's a travesty. We're supposed to be living in a democracy. It's bad enough we got a party that's anti-democracy, anti-American, the Republican Party. But then on top of it, our voter system, it's flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even more or as much an issue as having money in politics. Because if you can't vote right, it doesn't matter about the money in politics. Elections can be taken over by the voting and the counting.
Yeah, that's true. And I think more than anybody else on the internet right now, Brad Friedman at bradblog.com has devoted so much time, so much investigation into this. So has Greg Palast. And but you're absolutely right. We can talk till we're blue in the face. But if our system of voting is based on proprietary computer programs, we're screwed.
And you know something, Mike? The Occupy Wall Street are a lot of young Americans that you know, the Republican Party is trying to disenfranchise. And,
sure.
And to me, Brad Freeman is a hero. I tell you, that man's, I just love his passion and what he's trying to do. He's really on top of it. I really have a lot of respect for Brad.
Me too. That's why we asked him to substitute for us.
He's a fabulous substitute, Mike.
Yeah, he is. And he's devoted an enormous amount of time. And I can tell you from my own personal experience and knowing Greg and working with Greg, and having been kind of in that position myself, you know, he works on a shoestring. He absolutely works on a shoestring. And how he does it sometimes, I don't know. But he continues to fight the good fight. And the investigative work that he does, the work that he puts up on his website that may not necessarily be his, but a subject that he is committed to, it's just great. You know, anybody who really wants to know how the electoral system has been totally screwed, all you have to do is go to bradblog.com. It's all right there.
And you know something, Mike? He's gone right into the mouth of the lion, and he's taken on, you know, what was it, the American Chamber of Commerce was
right.
Harassing him.
Right.
And he's after the Koch brothers and the meetings they have. He's doing the real work of a true patriot in this country.
He is,
and I really appreciate him. And, you know, I wish we had 100 million more people like him. We'd be in a better world.
I hear you. Mark, thanks.
Okay, brother.
I appreciate what you had to say. And it's all true about Brad Freeman. You know, this is another guy who just doesn't get the kind of credit that he deserves. He really busts his ass out here trying to expose the essential corruption in our electoral system. Sure, there's money in the system, but even if you get the money out, which has to happen, by the way, but even if you do that, if the voting system is still run by these right-wing fanatic Christian organizations, like I think two of the three voting programs are owned outright by these groups, then in the final counting, in the final analysis, they can determine who's going to win an election. And there's no way that information can be made public. You know, getting some election commission to asked to see the program is ridiculous. They're not going to see it because it's the answer is no, this is proprietary information. You just trust us. We'll do fine. And this is a real important issue to me because the state of Georgia was the first one, the first state in the, what was it, the 2004 election, I think, Kathy, when every single voting machine in the state of Georgia was a Diebold computer with their program and their way to manipulate the system. And I remember the first time I voted on a touch screen voting machine, I just thought, you know, this is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. Put my finger on the screen. Oh, there's a nice X. Now, what happens now? Where's my stub that showed I voted when I used to vote with a punch card? All right, when we come back, a look at capitalism and poverty. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. Part of what is fueling the global occupation movement, of course, is the contempt and disgust that people are beginning to feel, should have happened a long time ago, for the capitalist system. This hour is sponsored by John O'Connor. Thank you, John. His message. Thanks, Mike. Well, thank you, John. John O'Connor, our sponsor this this hour. I don't know how many people participating, and this is not meant as a patronizing remark, I don't know how many people participating in the Occupy movement are aware that their problem is with capitalism. The targets, of course, are the predatory banks, or the lack of jobs, or the depletion of natural resources, or the contempt shown for the environment. Those are definitions of capitalism. Richard Wolff is a professor emeritus at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, and he's also a visiting professor at the graduate program in international affairs at the New School University in New York. He had a piece that has been making its way around the internet, and he points out the U.S. Census Bureau recently reported what most Americans already knew, that poverty is deepening. You don't need a college professor to tell you that, do you? All you have to do, there are the exceptions, of course. There are the people who, all of this is just completely blowing right past them. But those are people who have learned how to successfully manipulate the capitalist system. And those are usually people at the very peak. You know, that 0.1% or that 0.5% or the 1% itself. But the gap between rich and poor, as Richard Wolff points out, is growing. Slippage soon into the ranks of the poor now confront tens of millions of Americans who long thought of themselves as securely middle class. This is the fear, I think, that is driving the attitude in this country. And when you have a nation of 330 million people who start to become afraid, or fear becomes a dominant emotion, there's a potential there for some real trouble, real disaster. I think we all know that. Now, the reality, as Richard Wolff points out, is worse than what the Census Bureau reports. Consider that the Census Bureau's poverty line last year for a family of four was $22,000 a year. If you were above that, you were not considered living in poverty. If you're below that, you're considered living in poverty. Now, families of four, as I said, making more than that, were not counted as poor. But that poverty line works out to $15 per day per person, a family of four, for everything. Food, clothing, housing, medical care, transportation, education, all of it has to come out of that $15 per day per person. Let that sink in a second. $15 per day per person. I mean, that's... If you make $16 per day per person, you're not considered poor. If you have more than $15 per day per person in your household to pay for everything each person needs, the Census Bureau then does not count you as part of this country's poverty problem. So, the real number of U.S. citizens living in poverty, if it were more reasonably defined, poverty, is much larger than the 46.2 million reported by the Census Bureau living in poverty in 2010, last year. Therefore, it's much higher than the 15.1% of our people that the Census Bureau sees as poor. And if you want to look at this in a very conservative way, small c, about one in four Americans already lives in poverty. That's 25%, not 15, 25. And another one in four is or should be worried about joining the people who are living in poverty very soon. Anyone who tells you that the Teabag Party is viable is sick. Anyone who tells you that the occupation movement is not going to succeed is sicker. And I mean in a mental sickness way. And anyone who tells you that the Occupy movement, no matter how they describe it, whether it's the pig man himself, Rush Limbaugh, or Eric Cantor, this freak who, this hall monitor freak who is now the Senate or the House Majority Leader, yeah, these people who are so totally out of touch, if they describe the Occupy movement as anything other than a rebellion against capitalism, they have no idea what they're talking about. Zero. As Richard Wolff points out, long-lasting and high unemployment now drains away income from families and friends of the unemployed who have used up savings as well as unemployment insurance. As city, state, and local governments cut services and supports, people will have to divert money to offset part of those cuts. Now, where is that money for the diversion going to come from? How many people, I realize that people have begun to a far greater degree than 3 years ago, sucking some money away. But if you are living on less than $15 a day per person in your household, where are you going to get the money? And how much could you possibly be putting away? Now, when Medicare and if Social Security benefits are cut, then, as Richard Wolff points out, millions will be spending more to help their elderly parents. And finally, poverty looms for those with jobs because, first of all, wages are being cut or are failing to keep up with rising prices. And number two, benefits like pensions and medical insurance have been reduced or are non-existent. This is how capitalism works. Now, as Richard Wolff points out, deepening poverty has multiple causes, but the capitalist economic system is major among them. First, capitalism's periodic crises always increase poverty. And the current crisis is no exception. And as he points out more precisely, how capitalist corporations operate in or out of crisis regularly reproduces poverty. That's how it's designed, truth seeker. This is a part that where you weren't paying attention back when you had high school economics, if you had it at all. Or you had a teacher who kind of glossed over this part because, you know, you're not supposed to say, see, or hear, like the three monkeys, anything negative about capitalism. After all, didn't we spend 50 years locked in a death struggle with communism? Wasn't capitalism and, you know, God-fearing capitalism and godless communism, wasn't that the global battle that resulted in probably 100 million people on this planet dying? So no bad words about capitalism. They're not supposed to be allowed, even though capitalism...
America, one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. You know, we've talked a lot on this program about, to the discomfort of a lot of our listeners, that capitalism is the root cause of most everything negative that is happening right now, not just in the United States, but across the planet. And for people who really are unable to separate the American way of life, Christianity, and capitalism, those three have been deliberately intertwined by the power in this country for decades, if not centuries. If for someone unable to extricate and unravel that knot that Gordian knot. It's very uncomfortable to hear somebody saying that capitalism is the problem, is the cause of everything. And when you take it out a little bit further and realize that capitalism plus religion is the cause of everything, it's just like, I don't want to listen to this freak's program anymore. Okay, that's okay. I get that. I understand that. But as Richard Wolff, who is, among other things, professor emeritus, University of Massachusetts in Amherst, as he points out in this essay that's making its way around the internet, Capitalism and Poverty, he states categorically, capitalism's periodic crises always increase poverty, and the current crisis is no exception. And as we've talked about on this program, capitalism demands a constant underclass of people who will do anything for a job. This helps depress wages. And it also gives the corporations tremendous power. And that underclass in this country probably accounts for about 200 million people. We're not talking about 10,000 people. We're talking about an enormous collection of people just here. But as Richard Wolff points out precisely, how capitalist corporations operate, whether it's in crisis or not, regularly reproduces poverty. As he points out, at the top of every corporation, its major shareholders, 15, 20, or fewer, own controlling blocks of shares. They select a board of directors, usually 15 or 20 individuals, who run the corporation. These two tiny groups then make all the key decisions, what, how, and where to produce, and what to do with the profits. Poverty is one result of this capitalist type of enterprise organization. For example, corporate decisions generally aim to lower the number of workers or lower their wages, or both. The corporations, will automate, bring in the robots, or the speeded up assembly line, or they will export, in other words, outsource jobs, send them somewhere else, and replace higher paid workers by recruiting domestic and foreign substitutes willing to work for less. Now, this is occurring right now as the auto industry tries to, quote, recover, end quote. You have auto workers who are making as much as $25, $30 an hour. The auto industry, for years and years and years, is one of the backbone industries in this country, as was steel, as was electronics, as was heavy machinery, like what behemoths that Caterpillar makes. But the auto industry was kind of the backbone of this country for so long, one of the backbones. And the wages made by the workers were the result of bargaining between the corporate masters and the workers. The workers, of course, are always painted as the problem. Well, these sons of bitches are making $27 an hour. Good God! Well, that's gone now, see? The revived auto industry, they have a two-tier system. The upper level, the guys and gals who have been working there for a long time, continue to make their $25, $26, $27 an hour. But new hires that come in are now paid $12, $14, $16 an hour. And the unions go along with this because the alternative, they're told by the corporations, is no work. So, corporations export the jobs, they automate, they replace higher paid workers by recruiting domestic and foreign substitutes willing to work for less. Now, these are normal corporate actions. This is just what a corporation does all the time. And they generate the rising poverty as the other side of rising profits. The more the corporations are taking in, the less, obviously, they're going to be paying their workforce. It's mathematics. When poverty, as Richard Wolff points out, when poverty and its miseries stay with us, in other words, we can't seem to get out of one of these capitalist-created recessions or depressions. When poverty and its miseries remain always with us, workers tend to accept what employers dish out to avoid losing jobs and falling into poverty themselves. They look around, they say, oh my God, we have 15% of people unemployed in this country, regardless of what the real figures say. So I better shut up or I'm going to lose my job. More in a minute.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by John O'Connor. Thanks, John. His message is, thanks, Mike. Short and sweet. Thank you, John, for the sponsorship very much. So, back to this this piece by Professor Emeritus at Amherst, or University of Massachusetts at Amherst, Richard Wolff, Capitalism and Poverty. It's very interesting, to me it was. Anyway, he's talking about how the capitalist economic system is one of the major, I would say, the major, he says, one of the major causes of deepening poverty. As he points out, corporate decisions generally aim to lower the number of workers, lower their wages, or do both. Remember, workers in the capitalist system is just one more cost in the one that they try so desperately to reduce or eliminate altogether. That's what the iconic statement, workers of the world unite. One of the reasons that that statement was tossed out there, you have nothing to lose but what, your chains? Another major corporate goal is to control politics. Well, imagine that. Another thing we've been talking about on this program for years. And of course, I don't get me wrong. Again, I'm not trying to be patronizing to you. You know this, or you wouldn't be listening to this program. But to control politics, Professor Wolff says another major corporate goal. That's right up there with in the top one or two, isn't it? Wherever all citizens can vote, workers' interests prevail over those of directors and shareholders in elections. Obviously. I mean, that's what voting is all about. It's trying to elect representatives who will give the general population or lead the general population to a better deal than they've got now. And what does a better deal constitute? Better weather? Well, yeah, indirectly, I guess so. Better looking children? Better what? Better wages. Better job opportunities. Better so-called fringe benefits. So if corporations can control the political system, well, bingo. Now, to prevent citizens getting what they want, corporations devote portions of their revenue to finance politicians, political parties, mass media, and so-called think tanks. Think the Koch brothers. That's the one that most quickly pops into mind, okay? Now, the goal of these so-called think tanks and all the money that is pumped into the system by the corporations, by the capitalists, the goal is to shape public opinion and to control what government does. Now, you saw a classic example of that in over the past couple of years when Barack Obama and the Democrats were trying to get past some sort of health insurance reform. And the health insurance reform was designed to placate corporate America. I mean, let's be real. The forced option, the requirement that everybody buy health insurance, just like everybody has to buy car insurance. If you want a driver's license, go buy car insurance. Seems reasonable enough, except for one thing. We live in a country where single payer, or however you want to describe it, single payer health care should be available to anyone, to everyone. Socialized delivery of medical services, not socialized medicine. What the hell is socialized medicine? Well, what it is a meme developed by the Tea Partiers, developed by the corporations, developed by the Koch brothers, developed by people whose interest is to keep Americans confused, to keep the corporations in control, and to keep us in a state of ignorance and poverty. So all that talk during the Affordable Health Care Act as it was working its way through Congress, where it was labeled socialized medicine and Barack Obama is a socialist and communist and death panels, it was strictly designed to maintain corporate control. I mean, you know that. I know that. Everybody should know that. But the teabaggers, these brain-dead sons of bitches who are so easily manipulated, and this filthy media that we have that goes out and covers the brain-dead teabaggers as if they had something important to say to America. They don't. They only act as a mouthpiece for corporate America. So who are the right-wingers and the baggers talking to? Well, they're talking to themselves, but you and I are supposed to hear it. And we're supposed to go, ooh, 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 I don't want socialized medicine. Why not? Because why? Because I'll have to wait 8 months for an emergency appendectomy. Oh, yeah? Who told you that? I don't know. I just know it. I see. So to prevent control of the political system residing where it is supposed to, among the people, the corporations devote huge chunks of their revenues to finance politicians, political parties, mass media, and so-called think tanks. And as Richard Wolff points out, the corporations do not want Washington's crisis-driven budget deficits here and national debts to be overcome by big tax increases on corporations and the rich. Oh, no, 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 no. Capitalism sets up these disasters. And then the only way it can be paid for is with some of the profits ripped from the people by the capitalists. But no, 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 no. That's not going to happen. No, no. Instead, public discussion and politicians' actions are kept focused chiefly on cutting social programs for the majority of us. That's the only way out of the crisis, according to the corporations. According to the capitalists, well, you people have had just too long of an easy, soft ride. And now it's time to pay the piper for all the dancing you have been doing. What? That's right. So we're going to go after your Social Security. We're going to go after your retirement programs. We're going to go after your Medicare. We're going to stop Medicaid for you poor bastards. We're going to do all of this. Why? A, because we can. And B, because we want everything. Now, this is one of the driving forces, if not the driving force, behind the occupation movement. Yeah, a lot of attention is also paid to the other predations of capitalism, the environment, a general sense of well-being. All of that is lost to corporate America, to the capitalists. The only people who should enjoy their lives are the capitalists. And how do they do that? Not by living an authentic life. Oh, no, no. Not by living an authentic life, but by buying a $20 million yacht. Or by attacking, engineering an attack on another country to steal their resources. Or by buying did I say $20 million yacht? I meant $20 million apartment. By buying a $200 million yacht. That's how I'm going to be happy. Because I'm a capitalist. And if that means your kid doesn't go to preschool, I don't give a damn. Ooh. Ooh. Well, that just doesn't seem fair, does it, Truth Seeker? So all the discussion, and all you have to do is turn on TV. Be careful when you do that. Or pick up the paper and look at what the paid pigs like Eric Cantor and John Boehner and the rest of these bastards, what are they talking about? What are they talking about? They're talking exactly about this. Cut benefits, so-called, let's call them social programs, for the majority of us. Don't tax the corporations. Don't take away their depletion allowances. Don't take away their tax havens and the way they hide everything. Don't hold them accountable for destroying the system yet again. Not that we would want to hold them accountable for destroying the system, since the system is corrupt and filthy. But hold them accountable for the damage and destruction they're doing to all of us. Doesn't that seem reasonable? Doesn't that make sense? Before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by John O'Connor. Thank you, John, very much. And his message was simply, thanks, Mike. Well, back at you, pal. Thanks for the sponsorship. We appreciate it very much. Finishing this up about the predations of capitalism and the direct connection between capitalism and poverty. And again, this is simply a refresher course. I know a lot of you folks who listen to this program completely understand this and have ever since those misdirected courses in high school economics were presented to you. Because even as they were presented, you could take a look around. I know I did. As a high school student back in the day, take a look around at unemployment. What does that mean? What is unemployment? Poverty. What is poverty? Why does that exist in this land of the free and home of the brave? I had questions like that. Wars. Why are we involved in these conflicts all around the planet that have absolutely no bearing on our national security, even though we're told that they do? What's up with that? It took a while to figure it out. And as Richard Wolff points out, over the years, government interventions like Social Security, Medicare, minimum wage laws, regulations, anything to restrain capitalism, never completely worked to eradicate poverty, even though that was their ultimate goal. Restraining capitalism is so necessary in order to lower poverty because capitalism produces it. Capitalism thrives on it. Capitalism demands it. But all these government programs like Social Security, Medicare, minimum wage, they often help the poor, but they never ended poverty. And as Richard Wolff points out, the same applies to charities aiding the poor. Poverty always remained. And now capitalism's crisis worsens it again. Something more than government intervention or charity is required to end poverty. Gee, what could it be? Well, here's one solution. Production would have to be organized differently in a non-capitalist way. Instead of enterprise decisions being made by directors and major shareholders, the workers themselves could collectively and democratically make those decisions. Let's call this democracy at work. Since it involves the majority making the key enterprise decisions about what, how, and where to produce, and what to do with the profits. As Wolff says, or writes, if the workers made those decisions, here are some likely results. Primary goals would no longer be to reduce their own numbers or their wages. If technological changes or reduced demand for their outputs required fewer workers, they would likely maintain the wages of workers and retrain them for other jobs meeting growing demands. Workers would not be fired and thereby pushed into poverty. And second, workers making democratic decisions would not likely allow today's huge differences between average wages and top manager salaries and bonuses, etc. By eliminating concentrated income and accumulated wealth at the top, resources would be freed finally to end poverty at the bottom. A democracy at work system could produce and secure the vast middle class that this country pretended but yet never really had. Workers, Richard Wolff says, disposing of their enterprise's profits would no longer distribute a portion to politicians and political parties in order to protect a rich minority against the envy and resentment of the majority. By establishing a far more egalitarian income distribution, a democracy at work system could also transform a political system now corrupted by the money of capitalists and the rich. And third and last, a democracy at work system would be less likely to raise prices or reduce output quality. When workers are both decision makers at work as well as consumers of their own outputs, they would more likely pass and sustain laws to outlaw the price gouging and quality deterioration common in capitalism. You ever notice that? Price gouging and quality deterioration. And Richard Wolff closes very simply, a serious commitment to end poverty and its costly social effects requires us to face that capitalism has always reproduced widespread poverty as the other side of profits for a relative few. No wonder such a system has provoked Occupy Wall Street and the other Occupy movements and so many of its signature slogans and demands. It's all so simple, isn't it? This essay was written by Richard Wolff, Professor Emeritus at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, and also a visiting professor at the graduate program in international affairs of the New School University in New York City. And you can find it online if you want to get a copy of it. It's a very quick read. Capitalism and Poverty, Richard Wolff, W-O-L-F-F, Capitalism and Poverty. And I really do think, I recommend that you get your hands on a copy and just keep it. There's nothing academic about it. It's just some very simple statements. Very simple. So the Occupy movement in the United States and around the planet is not going to go away. What is going to go away is this neoliberal capitalism that is destroying you, destroying me, the generation in front of us, the generation behind us, and the whole planet. That is what is going to go away. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.